Okay. We're good to go. So today's Gemara is once again an enigma wrapped in a mystery. because it's like a difficult Gemara. Actually, it's fairly straightforward. The problem is it's so straightforward, you ask yourself, what's being said over here? And part of the problem is it doesn't seem to jibe with the approach we've taken in the previous narratives, in the previous episodes of this Gemara. So it's in the middle of page 26, side A. There's a colon, which is in and of itself unusual. Last week we started with the first colon, and now we're at the second colon. And after the colon, there's just one word, and the word is gufa. Gufa means the body, or let us get to the essence, the body of the subject. You don't see a colon?
No, I'm sorry.
That's because...
I see this first colon.
That's a colon.
This is a colon. All right.
A little colon. Do you want a big colon?
How many colonoscopy after the
second? Kas v'shal. So let's talk about the subject itself. That's how you would phrase this in English. Gufa means the body, means let's go back to the subject itself. And the subject, of course, is different fuels which we may not use in order to kindle the Shabbos candles, the Shabbos lamps. And we're going to talk about fueling or the sources of fueling for the sacred illumination of Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar said, and we've come across this already, but the Gemara now is adding to this. Ein madlikin bitzori. We do not kindle the Shabbos lamps with tzori. And tzori is an aromatic kind of fuel. There's a discussion of what exactly it is. According to some opinions, it's the same detail that's identified in the Torah when it comes to the incense. According to other opinions, it is definitely not tzori. Rashi and Ramban seem to wrangle about this. And other Rishonim weigh in. I'm going to leave that for now because it's not actually relevant what tzori is specifically. The point is that there is this aromatic kind of fuel. And Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says we shouldn't use it to kindle the Shabbos lamps. And then the Gemara says, V'chein hoye Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar eimer. And indeed, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar used to say, Tzori einoi elo sraf matze aktaf. Tzori is only sap, which comes from, which seeps out of the resin. It's the resin, a residue, a resin of a tree called ktaf. What in heaven is going on over here? The Gemara is repeating itself. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says you don't use the fuel called tzari. And then the Gemara says, V'chein oyed Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. And indeed, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar used to say that tzari is, after all, resin. It's a fuel that comes from the wood itself, from the tree itself. So let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says, Ein madlikim bitzori. We do not kindle the Shabbos candles with tzori. Kidim mefarish le'el, as we have already explained. Va'oid, and now, kidokotoni va'ozil, as we will further learn. So the reasons that we talked about earlier was shehu off, because it's very, very flammable. It's very, very rarefied, like gasoline, and therefore it could easily burst into flame or cause some kind of conflagration. And the other reason we said is because it's aromatic. And the concern was that somebody might use a little bit of the aromatic oil to rub into the skin, which is fine 6 days a week. But on Shabbos, if you take fuel from something that's kindled, something that's burning, what are you necessarily doing? You're shortening the life of the fire. You're hastening its being extinguished. And that's not permitted on Shabbos. Not only are you not allowed to extinguish a fire on Shabbos, you're not allowed to accelerate the process or hasten the extinguishing of the fire. In which case we say, you shouldn't use the tzari, you shouldn't use this aromatic fuel for two reasons. Because it's off, because it's flammable. And we talked about this in the previous class, whether it's because people will be afraid and because of their anxiety, they won't sit at the Shabbos table. They'll run out and get fresh air and be afraid to sit there lest it blows. Or maybe there might actually be a fire. And that certainly wouldn't be good, wouldn't bode well for the Shabbos menucha, for the peace and serenity we're craving to experience on Shabbos. Okay, so these were the two reasons we talked about. So Rashi says, Reb Shimon ben Elazar says, Ein madlikin. We don't use the tzari to light these Shabbos lamps. Kidum mefarish li'el, as we explained earlier. Va'ayid. And Reb Shimon ben Elazar is going to tell us, Kidakatani v'ne'oz, like he says, De'enibo minapri. It doesn't come from the fruit. Why is that relevant? You'll see. But there's this business that we want oil that comes from a fruit rather than the wood or tree itself. Elamina eitz. It comes from eitz sraf. It comes from the residue or resin of the tree. Ba'alma. V'havalek is zefet. And as such, it shares a common fate with what we call pitch or tar. V'einin nimshach. And it's sticky, and the resin doesn't easily flow through the wick. And because it doesn't easily flow through the wick, it might sputter, and you'll be tempted to fix the candles on Shabbos to adjust or make sure that the flames keep burning. And if you adjust the lamp on Shabbos, that in and of itself is already a violation of Shabbos. So we need something which is easily burning, easily feeding the fire. This is Rashi's first take. Now, I have to tell you, Rashi's first take is very problematic. Why? Because if we have two reasons already, then why does Reb Shimon ben Elazar have to tell us a reason? But the problem really is the other way around. If Reb Shimon ben Elazar was a Tana, a rabbi from the Mishnah, gave us a reason, then why did the rabbis of the Gemara have to come up with other reasons? This is not my question. The Tosfos asked this question. The Tosfos says, why did they need to come up with their own rationale as to why this isn't permitted? There's a Mishnah that it says not permitted. Now there's another way of understanding this. Rashi lists a second interpretation. Lishna achrina. Another syntax. V'chein hoyer Reb Shimon ben Elazar Eimer, that the reason Reb Shimon ben Elazar gives by mentioning, oh, by the way, you know, it doesn't even come from the fruit. It's resin from a tree, sap from a tree. Lav time of the milsa yoiv. He's not giving us a reason. Elohachikamar. He just happens to be telling you, you know, the stuff, this tzari that you were talking about, you should know, all it really is just some resin. It's just some sticky resin. That's all it is. It's not like it's anything fancy. It's resin. Comes from a tree. Elohachikamar. V'oidoyoimer used to say, davarachem tzari. Since we're on the subject of tzari, and people were looking around with this quizzical look on their face and saying, okay, we're talking about the tzari. Well, what in heaven is tzari? So the Shema says, nothing special. It's sap, it's resin, that's all. It doesn't require any great talent to be able to harvest the resin. It's the nature of the tree. It exudes this resin. So they harvested the resin off it. Now, according to the second way of learning this, the second way in Rashi, there isn't so much of a question here. Why don't we use tzari on Friday night? We have some very good reasons why. It's flammable. It could burst into flame. That wouldn't be conducive to Shabbos, whether because the reason that people would leave the Shabbos table or because people might sit there in fear. Or maybe it actually would blow. Fine. Another reason. It's beautiful. It smells so nice. Aromatic candles. What could be more Shabbat-like than aromatic candles? Non-aromatic candles. Why would that be more Shabbat-like? This is beautiful. This is ambience. There's light and aroma. Well, there's a little problem here. That business with the aroma, it's very nice to have scented candles, but if the oil has this fine scent, this beautiful aroma, people, without thinking twice, would kind of just dip their finger inside. And once they dip their finger inside, you know, because skin's a little rough, nice smell. And that's going to be a violation of Shabbos. So on one hand, it creates an inviting atmosphere. On the other hand, it almost invites people to violate Shabbat. Not a good thing. So according to the second version of Rashi, that's the reason we don't use tzari. And if Shimon Ben-Elazar says, oh, by the way, there's another idea here. I just would, you know, since we're talking about tzari, tzari, einoi ela, is only sraf ha-noitif ma'atzei aktaf. It's just resin from the tree. That's all it is. Because there is actually a discussion about tzari being a mixing of multiple different ingredients. There is a discussion. So there could be another form of tzari, as I mentioned. It seems that Rashi has an understanding of tzari in the 11 different ingredients with which the incense in the Beis HaMikdash was made. Rashi seems to have a different understanding. He seems to indicate that the tzari there is a very sophisticated ingredient, which isn't anything simple. But here, Shimon Ben Elazar says, no, it's very simple. It's just resin. It's resin. We're talking about tzari. So he says, this is what we're talking about. But the problem is the first language of Rashi. The first way of understanding this doesn't seem to make any sense. Don't use tzari, kid mefarash le'el, like we explained earlier. But earlier is the rabbis of the Gemara speaking. Hundreds of years later. Ooh, kid de katani ve'ozel, as we will learn, continue learning. What do you mean, ooh, kid de katani ve'ozel? That's going to be a Mishnah. That's primary. That's front, right, and center. And anyway, if you have a Mishnah that tells you can't use it, why look for other reasons? You have a reason you can't use it. Because you have to use oil that comes from a fruit. And this comes from wood. Comes from a tree. End of story. Why look for other reasons? So this is a great big discussion in the commentaries of the Rishonim and the Achronim discuss this at great length. Is trying to understand how would we appreciate the thrust of this Gemara if all it is simply not only giving us another reason, but ultimately it's providing a reason which eclipses the need for other reasons altogether. So why would we have to find other reasons? Like Tosfos asked the questions. Why create reasons when need to create reasons? The Mishnah already told us this is precluded. Forget that it's off. Forget that it's flammable. Forget that it's aromatic. It's not relevant. It comes from a tree. End of story. So if you look in the Ritva seems to indicate that this has something to do with the fact that when the Gemara reads, the Gemara says, Reb Shimon ben Elazar Eimer Ein Madlikim Betzari. Statement. V'chein oy Reb Shimon ben Elazar Eimer. And he used to say, which this is to be understood in the following fashion. Reb Shimon ben Elazar said, you shouldn't use tzari. Why not? For the reasons we talked about. Because it's off. Because you might shami yistapik. The reasons we talked about. That's why you shouldn't use tzari. Shimon ben Elazar then says, there's another issue over here. It's another issue. It's not as technical. It doesn't really actually proscribe its use. The thing is, the tzari is disadvantaged to begin with anyway, because it doesn't come from a fruit. As if to say, you know, really, really oil should come from a fruit. And this doesn't come from a fruit. So it's true, you can't use it. Forget the fact that it doesn't come from fruit. You can't use it because you can't use it. But in truth, it has a more fundamental issue altogether. In doing so, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Shimon ben Elazar, is sharing with us insight into how we view the concept of kindling flames in a holy and a sacred kind of setting. Why? Well,
to get sap out of a tree, you have to injure the tree.
Yeah, but to get oil out of an olive, you have to pulverize the olive.
Yeah, but that's the fruit that you eventually either eat or whatever.
You don't have to destroy the tree, you have to bruise the tree.
Yeah, you have to injure the tree.
Injured trees recover quite quickly, like injured people.
Survive.
They're survivors.
You have maple syrup, you ever eat that? Mm-hmm.
You bruise the tree, you get out the sap, and the tree regenerates itself very quickly. You know something interesting? I learned one of my students on Facebook, his father-in-law grows a sorghum. His father-in-law grows a sorghum. So he was in Israel, Kfar Chabad this year, for Sukkot. I don't know if it's his first year or it's the first time he noticed this. His father-in-law grows esrogim. He said to his father-in-law, how come you go around picking the esrogim after Sukkot? You're done. Pick them next year. We know the esrog grows in the tree a whole year. Well, look. So the father told him something very interesting. He says these are the stunted esrogim. This is not when the good esrogim don't grow now. These grew earlier and they didn't kind of reach maturation. The new esrogim that I grow now, these are the esrogim for next year. So the thing is, if the tree is laden with old fruit, the old fruit, it's taking energy.
Oh, the energy.
It's taking energy. It says you have to cleanse the tree, and then the tree is able to focus its energy. So sometimes actually when you get off excess energy, it doesn't damage the tree. On the contrary, it actually helps the tree replenish itself. It almost catalyzes regeneration, like pruning, exactly. You cut the branches, they grow better. I'm not sure that the bruising of the tree doesn't ultimately help the tree. I'm not sure, it might. But the thing is, it's not about having rachmanis on trees. That's not what this is about. It's true, you're not allowed to kill a fruit-bearing tree, you're not allowed to cut a fruit-bearing tree, that's true, unless you have a good reason. But the notion of bruising trees or not is not the issue here. And the issue here seems to be as follows. And this is based on statements that are made in the Talmud as well as the Rishonim. I'm sewing together a lot of material right now, but I'm putting it here in a simple tapestry. The idea of using oil to kindle a flame comes from where?
Anointing.
No, kindling a flame? But you don't want to light a flame when you anoint somebody's head. That wouldn't be good. Where does it come from?
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah?
No, Hanukkah comes later.
Hanukkah's not even 22 centuries old.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. But you're not entirely wrong, as you'll see in a moment. Okay. Where does it come from? Let me phrase the question differently. Is there an actual biblical mitzvah to kindle lamps?
The menorah.
Of course. And how does one find fuel for the menorah? Oil. Olive oil. And you know, the Torah gives instructions about the olive oil. Shemen, zayit, zoch, kosis, katit lamor. It's a whole methodology. Like Rashi explains, megargare b'resha zayit, you have to choose special olives, leave them exposed to the sun so that they soften and ripen more quickly, and then they have to be left and they have to be handled properly. It's an art. Getting at the sediment-free, purest olive oil is an art and a skill. And the point is this. All flames kindled ultimately take us back to the original divine command to light the menorah. Because the whole idea that we light even a yahrzeit candle in order to memorialize a loved one or a beloved one or a tzaddik, they light candles. The Sephardic Jews make this hilulah and everybody comes and lights a candle. Where does it come from? It says, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam, the candle, the lamp of God is the soul of a person. Where does it come from? It comes from the menorah. Because in the prophecy that Zechariah sees, he's shown this imagery of a menorah. And the angel who's narrating the prophecy says to him, what do you see? He says, I see a menorah. So what's the menorah? But the menorah is ultimately a metaphor for the souls of the Jewish people. In fact, the menorah is a metaphor for the Jewish people. And the different branches represent the variety in attitude of avodas Hashem and serving Hashem. Seven different lamps, seven midot, seven ways, not halachic and non-halachic, chas v'shalom. But within the framework of doing mitzvahs, one emphasizes exuberance and joy and positive energy, and another emphasizes discipline, and serious focus, and measured, very, very reverential, almost trepidation in their approach to Hashem, because they take Yiddishkeit so seriously. It's different approaches.
So
the menorah represents the people.
How are we okay to light paraffin candles?
It's a very good question. We're going to talk about that soon. Hold that thought.
Because paraffin comes out of oil.
I know exactly where paraffin comes from. Relax. It's a very good question. We're going to discuss that soon. I'm really kind of introducing everything we're going to talk about tonight with this. So the point is that we look towards the biblical precedent. The biblical precedent specifically fingers the idea and ideal of a fruit that is pulverized or squeezed, and from it comes juice, and eventually from the juice, oil separates. And once upon a time, it took a lot of time, and today we have centrifuges. But that's the idea, until you get the oil out. because of this, everything, there's an expression called the tikkun chachamim kein deraisa tikkun. When the rabbis made an injunction, they made it along the lines or in the image of the biblical version. They don't make up their own Judaism. Even the chacham didn't make up their own things. They developed, they extended Torah ideas and ideals. So because there's this notion of kindling, and because the flames represent the soul, and because there's something beautiful about the light, and because the light represents Torah, and a whole bunch of other things, so we try to almost recreate the imagery of the sacred kindling of lamps in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's a fruit. That's a fruit. So there's some who say olive oil is the finest oil, and others maintain that it doesn't even make a difference. Whether olive oil is or isn't the finest is actually irrelevant. For whatever reason, the Torah said to use olive oil. There's a midrash that says that Yisrael are daimim to the zayit, that we, the Jewish people's odyssey, is similar to an olive. That ma zayit kishakochen oso, motzi shamna, just like the olive, when you crush it, pulverize it, that's when its oil, that's when its energy is revealed. So it is also with the Jewish people. When you crush us over the course of history, that's what revealed the true energy, the true courage, the true metal, the true force of spirit that was able to triumph over the spirit of force. So this is the business of, Shimon ben Elazar says, like really and truly, like if you want to get into it, I understand all the reasons you can't use sari. He says, but really and truly, the tzari is not from a fruit. It's not from a fruit. And this really sets the stage. So this is the way the Ritva and others, Mordechai Bennett and others, explain the Gemara. And we understand where Rashi brings down this approach. And it's alluded to in the words of the Gemara, V'chein. As if to say this. It's as if to say, Nebshim ben Elazar eimen eimad likim bitzari. And the Gemara leaves unspoken the reason, the rationale behind those words. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, you don't do it. Why? Look in the Gemara, you'll find that way. But he didn't articulate, he didn't say, he says, you don't do it. It doesn't work for Shabbos. And there are multiple reasons. Use your own noodles. It's easy to figure out. But then Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, I want to tell you something else. That the fundamental issue here ultimately is that Sari ein ela sofa neitzav ma'atei ktov. And now we understand the cadence of the Gemara. Rabbi Shmuel says, kol ha'yetzim in ha'etz, ein madlikim bay. Rabbi Shmuel says, indeed, anything that comes from wood, we don't light with it. We don't light with it. Rabbi Shmuel ben Beroika, another Rabbi Shmuel, this one identified by the name of his father, so we don't confuse the two. He says, ein madlikin ela b'yotze min ha'pri. It's not just that we don't harvest the resin of the wood. He says, it's got to come from a fruit. But now we're understanding this, right? Because the biblical image is when you get oil from a fruit. That's what the idea of kindling lamps is really about.
So avocado oil would be fine.
That would seem to be fine here, but the Gemara is going to go on. Rabbi Tarfon says, keep your avocado oil. A madlikin ela b'shemen zayit bilvad. Only shemen zayit. Let's take a look now. In the Rashi says, Atziak Tof, that's the name, Kach Shmam, Min HaPri. So what are you excluding here? As you said, it includes avocado oil. You're right. He says, La'afuke Shemen Dogim. It comes to exclude the liver oil or the oil that comes from fish. Fish are very oily. But you can actually make fuel out of fish. Right? The aboriginals living up in Nunavut. They used to burn the blubber and eat it. It was great. It was a super, super substance. It served many purposes and gave them lots of omega-3. So anyway, that wouldn't work. Couldn't light Shabbos candles with whale blubber. No good. Why? Because it's got to come from a fruit. So whether it's Shemen Dogim or Itron, which is gasoline, or Tzari, which is a byproduct of some kind of resin. So that's not going to work. Rabbi Tarfon says, no, it's got to come from Shemen Zayis. Now, really and truly, Rabbi Tarfon's words make a lot of sense. Why does Rabbi Tarfon's word make sense? Because in the Torah,
origin.
Exactly, the biblical origin is Shemen Zayit. That's the biblical origin. So what are you doing? The biblical the origin, the biblical idea is take shemen, take olive oils and crush it. So that's the idea. Amad Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, al raglav, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri stands up on his feet. You know, when somebody stands up, he's getting aggressive. People say, I'm not going to take this sitting down. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri gets up and he says, Rabbi Tarfon, he says, with all due respect, Maya san she bavel. What should the people in Babylon do? Apparently in Babylon, they don't have any olive trees. Olive trees don't grow in Kurdistan or wherever Babel is. Syria. Shein lam ela shem shum shemen. They have lots of sesame there. Sesame seed oil is aplenty. Now, obviously, you can always get everything anywhere, but not everybody can get it everywhere. It's not plentiful. The Chacham had to be reasonable in making their demands of the Jewish people. That is to say this. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is saying, well, you say olive oil is not practical. It's like saying, oh, Torah says an etrog. What, do etrogim grow in Canada? They don't grow in Czechoslovakia either. So how do you get an etrog? I don't know.
Figure it out. Go to Italy.
Go to Italy, get an etrog. It's not simple. It's not simple. So what does the Torah want from us? You know, after the war, there was a group of Jews, some survivors, who ended up moving up into Norway or Sweden, north of Oslo. And the winter was impossible. It was basically night, continuously night. They had a half hour of day.
Like Canada.
And they wrote a letter to the chief rabbi of Palestine. Yes, Palestine was a Jewish country. It was an Ottoman protectorate, but the chief rabbi of Israel was called the chief rabbi of Palestine. Later became the chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Cook. And they asked him, what should we do? We don't even have enough time to daven shacharis here. So Rabbi Cook wrote them back a letter. Clearly God doesn't want you up in Sweden. Come to Israel. But you can't reasonably say that when we went into Galut Bavel, we were sent into Bavel, and the vast majority of the Jewish people at the time the Gemara was being written were not living in the Holy Land. They were living in Bavel.
It was mainly the leadership that was taken to Bavel.
You're going back centuries. The main leadership before the destruction of Beis HaMikdash says v'achedesh v'amazgarim moem, that means they took the talent, the brain.
Remained.
The brain. You're going back very, very, very long time ago. I mean, now you're going back way before the time of the Gemara. You're going back almost 600 years before the Gemara, 700 years before the Gemara. That's in the original exile before the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. They did a brain drain. They took all the talent and all the wisdom and all the learning and all the craftsmanship and all the ability, and they took it all to Bavel to turn the remnants in Judea into a third world country which wouldn't have the ability to succeed because it lost its leadership and it lost its brains and skills. That's another story. Let's not confuse the two. Now we're centuries ahead, okay? This is 70 years before the story of Purim we're talking about, okay? This is now way after. We're talking the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. The Mishnah is only written in the century after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. The Gemara follows hundreds of years later, maybe like 17 centuries ago. Okay. So most of the Jewish people are living in Bavel. In fact, where is the Gemara compiled? In Bavel. It's called Talmud Bavli. It's called Bavel. Okay. So you cannot say, well, Jews shouldn't live in Bavel. It was almost like saying Jews shouldn't live. So who made this injunction of Shabbat candles? It doesn't say it in the Torah. The rabbis made the injunction. So when the rabbis make an injunction, they have to be reasonable about their injunction. Do you know that it's a mitzvah, it's a biblical mitzvah, to sanctify the Shabbat upon its arrival? And to sanctify and make a demarcation when Shabbat ends. The first is called Kiddush, which means to sanctify. The latter is called Havdalah. So everybody knows you make Kiddush over a glass of wine. Where in the Torah does it say you have to make? It says, Zochar Asiyah Mashavas HaKadshay. As Rambam says in Sefer HaMitzvahs, Zochar Asiyah means Zechira B'dibur. You have to use your words, you have to verbalize. Okay, that's fine. So where does it say a glass of wine? Where does it say, where does it raise a glass? Where's Bar Paragraph? It doesn't say it. Where did it come from? The rabbis created this injunction. When they created the Siddur, when they created the liturgy of prayer, they ordained that since it's a mitzvah to eat on Shabbat and delight in Shabbat, so it's a mitzvah to have a Shabbat meal and we'd be sitting around the table, they ordained that the meal should begin by raising a glass of wine and that the formula called Kiddush that we recite until this very day should be done over a glass of wine. And what happens if you have no wine? What do? You make Kiddush over challah. What happens if you have no challah? A friend of mine told me a story. His grandfather was in line on late Friday afternoon. He was the last group heading into the gas chambers. And he had with him a biscuit. And he had the presence of mind to break the biscuit in two to make Lechem Mishnah. And he said to himself, the last thing I'll do is I'll make Kiddush. I'll take on Shabbos early. That'll be my last mitzvah before they kill me. Imagine the presence of mind. I knew this man. I remember this man. And he broke the cookie in half and he made Kiddush over two halves of a cookie because that's all he had. He had a cracker with him. And he was heading to the concentration camp. And something crazy, miraculous thing happened. All of a sudden, somebody came in and they needed workers and said, why are you sending these guys there? They'd seem able-bodied. That whole group of boys didn't end up in the gas chambers. And he survived. So what he did is halachically accurate because it's all you have. That's what you have. You do what you could. Ideally, it should be done over a glass of wine. You have no wine, use challah. What about Havdalah? So Havdalah, also it's about using your words. Havdalah is like a whole different kind of animal. It's not so simple that everybody's obligated on Havdalah, at least not the Havdalah over a glass of wine. What happened? What happened is when the rabbis first came to the land of Israel after the second coming, second Beis HaMikdash, and all of these things were ordained, the population couldn't reasonably be expected to come up with two glasses of wine a week. Most people just couldn't afford it. So the rabbis said, listen, Friday night, it's the meal. Let that start with a glass of wine. Havdalah will give them a formula. It's a formula that we read until this very day in the Shmoneh Esrei on Saturday night. As decades went on and prosperity increased in the land of Israel, people weren't starving anymore. Then the rabbi said, you know what? Really, Havdalah should get the same billing as Kiddush. It should be over a glass of wine too. But because it was only a later injunction, it never kind of caught up fully with Kiddush. And there are more people that make Kiddush than make Havdalah, which is part of the problem of modern Jewish people. They sanctify everything, but they don't know how to make distinctions. It's a big problem. It's a big problem because Havdalah is what keeps us apart, what keeps us distinct and separate. So sanctification is very important, but it has to be coupled with Havdalah. You have to sanctify. You have to also know how to create distance, how to separate. At any rate, the point that I'm making is an injunction that the rabbis might bring about necessarily has to take into consideration the possibility of the people. It has to be reasonable. So much so that it says if there's a takana, if there's an injunction that's brought about by the high court of the Jewish people and the people can't do it, it says that the injunction fades away. The injunction of the Sanhedrin is biblically binding. But if it's gzeira she'ein hatzibur yecholim lamed by, if it's something that people can't sustain, then it has to be done away with. And there's two ways of understanding it. Either it's done away with or it simply fades by itself. It never even took root. Because in order for it to become, it has to be acclaimed. The Sanhedrin introduces it, but the nation of Israel must embrace and acclaim it. So now, it's reasonable to talk about the idea of oil coming from fruit. It's reasonable. It's not an unreasonable thing. It actually makes good sense. It makes sense that the kindling of Shabbat candles should in some way mirror or be in the image of the Torah's ordination of kindling, the menorah. It makes sense.
Rabbi also says here, one of the reasons it wasn't allowed to be taken from a tree is it's not easily drawn by a wick.
Yes, but we talked about that already.
Oh, I'm sorry, okay.
And we will mention it again soon.
I was trying to keep up with your reading.
I'll mention it again soon. So here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri gets very aggressive here. He gets up on his feet. He says, Rabbi Tarfon, what in heaven are you talking about? You're a rabbi. You're a sage. You're a Rebbe, you're a leader of the Jewish people. You have to be thinking not about yourself or your circumstances. You have to be thinking about the nation. We know that the Jewish people live in many places. You cannot sit here in Israel where we're awash in olive oil, because that was one of the gross national products of Israel, and you talk about olive oil. Yep, it's got to be olive oil. Why? Oh, the Bible says olive oil. The menorah was olive oil. Hanukkah, for that reason, is best on olive oil. Of course it's got to be olive oil. What are you talking about? We have a massive amount of a people that lives in Bavel. They don't have olive oil. It's not a commodity that's easily available. They have shumshumin. Could the Chachamim make an injunction that simply ignores the reality on the ground and what people are capable of doing? What about the people living in media? Which would be somewhere in modern-day Iran. They have oil that comes from nuts. And what about the Jews who are living in the northern area of Egypt, which had one of the most powerful Jewish communities during the times of the Mishnah? What should they do? Ein lehem ela shemen tzinonot. They only have the oil, I guess you would say, of radish or scallion. Uma yasa anshe kaputkia. Don't ask you where that is. Shein lehem loikach v'loikach. They nebach don't have any of that. Maybe it's like Arabia or Kuwait or something. They have neft. They have gas. They have oil. That's what they have. What should these people? Not light Shabbat candles? Elo, ein lecha, elo masha amru chachamim, ein madlikin. If the chachamim said ein madlikin, then ein madlikin. Why did chachamim say ein madlikin? Why did chachamim say there are certain fuels that are proscribed? Because it's these fuels that are not conducive to Shabbat Kodesh. Why would they not be conducive to Shabbat Kodesh? Because they invite the person to use the fuel, which would cause people to extinguish a fire on Shabbos, and that's a violation of Shabbos. Because it's flammable. Because it doesn't easily move up the wick, because the oil isn't drawn, and if so, people without thinking are going to be adjusting a wick on Shabbos, and that's not permitted. The Chachamim knew what they were doing. They said there's certain oil that's not conducive. Certain fuels don't work for Shabbat. But nobody asked you to create a new religion here. Well, you're getting so holy. You're getting so swept up in the biblical imagination and say, oh, the Torah says olive oil. We need to be olive oil just like the menorah. What are you talking about? Where did you get that from? And he says, umadlikim b'shem edagim. And let me tell you something else. You can use the oil that you can get out of fish. It's not even organic. Forget that it's not from a fruit. It's not from the ground. It's from a fish. So it's flammable. Who cares? Ubi itron. Now we're talking it's not even flammable, not organic. It doesn't even come from a live source. It's fossil fuels. It's a mineral. Nonetheless. The Gemara says, it'll be itron, afal be the mizefes koi kos, even if it comes from pitch, from tar, fossil fuel. Nonetheless, it could still be used. Let's go back to Shemen Dagim. Sorry, I missed the Rashi. He says, why do we use, we only have to use the list of proscribed fuels. Don't add to it, whatever the sages said not. Like the things we learned in the Mishnah. And you can use the oil of a fish, even though it's like the fat of an animal. It doesn't come out of a fruit. So you would say, oh, you can't use chelev, you can't use tallow, you shouldn't be able to use this either. He says, no, this you could use. This you could use. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's point is, we have to be practical. Sure, it's great to use olive oil. Sure, it's nice. Practical. It's got to be practical. Now, I should share with you that in the Shulchan Aruch it says that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that we can use anything. But however, mitzvah min hamuvchar, the best way to do this mitzvah is with olive oil. I also have to tell you that that's not necessarily the practice in many Jewish communities. In fact, I know for a fact that the Rebbetzin used candles. So if the Rebbetzin used paraffin, it's good enough for us. Good enough for us. The point of Shabbos candles was not to create some kind of sacred or holy kindling. That's the point of the menorah. The menorah is in the image of the Beis HaMikdash. The point of Shabbos candles is practical. Practical means that it should be available for everybody, easily. That every single Jewish family should have candles burning on the table. That's the mitzvah. And anything you do that detracts from that is not a mitzvah, but on the contrary. You're proscribing the possibility of people's enjoying Shabbos. And if people feel like they're like the schlepper, like they're like the half-Jew, because I have paraffin, all the fancy Jews have olive oil, and therefore they feel their Shabbos is compromised, or they feel they're not able to fully experience Shabbos, who says that's a good thing? The important thing was there should be light. The emphasis was not the fuel, the emphasis is not the container, the emphasis is the light. Light that's conducive to Shabbat, meaning that it doesn't invite violation of Shabbos. That's what we have to focus on. The Gemara finishes off now and says as follows. Rabbi Shimon ben Shizuri, Oimer, he says, Madlikim b'shemen pekuos, we're allowed to use the shemen of pekuos. And then there's like three different opinions we talked about. So how does it translate in your Gemara, pekuos?
Colocynth.
Huh?
Colocynth.
Colocynth. That's very helpful. Okay. Good. I don't know what it is either. So I'll just stick with shemen pekuos. Ubeneft and with gasoline. Now the Gemara finishes off and it says, Sumchus, the sage who was named Sumchus says, Kol hayetzim in habasar e madlikim bay. You can't use animal fat. Ela b'shemen dogim. But you could use the oil that comes from a fish. So the Gemara says, hello, Sumchus hainu tanakama. We already heard this. The Tanakhama, the first opinion we read earlier, told us you can't use animal fat. And now we hear Rabbi Yechiel ben Nuri was telling us, yeah, you can't use animal fat. However, you could use the fish oil. So what is Sumchus saying? Sumchus is just simply regurgitating and repeating the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Ika binayu. There is a difference between the Tanakhama and the opinion of Sumchus. And you know what the difference is? The difference is the case of Rav Bruno. Rav Bruno gave us a teaching about kindling and about fuel. Rav Bruno said this in the name of Rav, the disciple of Rav Yochanan. V'loy misayimi, but we don't know who says what. So that's why the Gemara says Sumchus' opinion and the Tanakhama's opinion. And the Gemara quotes both opinions and it seems like they're saying the same thing, but really they aren't. We just don't know who said what. All right, what is going on here? Who is this Rav Bruno and what did he say in the name of Rav? So let's take a look in Rashi. So Sumchus hainu Tanakama, Rashi says, Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri, the apostle, kol hanach, the masnisen, that's Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri. Rabbi Yechon interpreted the Mishnah. It says all of these things are proscribed and prohibited. However, the idea of the olive oil, of fish oil is able to be used. Like we learned in the Mishnah. Chelav yetzim and abasar. Chelav means that which comes from flesh, from mammals or whatever. However, va'achsha b'shem and dogim, he permitted the use of olive oil. So the Gemara said, ika binayu. No, they're not saying the same thing. They're not. What's the difference between the two? Rav Bruno. So Rashi says like this. Rav Bruno, the Amar, tzarech loseis l'toichai shemen kolshu. Rav Bruno says, all you need to do to fix this oil is to lubricate it. You just need to add a little oily consistency. What's the problem? The problem is it's not moving up the wick. So you need to make it a little slicker, that's all. Once it becomes a little slicker with olive oil, everything's fine. Or any other oil. Inami. So now, you're saying, do you say, the achshar chelev mehutach betaruvus shemen kolshu? Is he saying you can use animal fat as long as you mix a little bit of oil into it? Or is he saying you can use the fish, but only after you put some regular oil into it? This is the question. And the Gemara says, Chad mehanoch, one of these opinions is a Tanoi Savar l'Rav Bruna that holds the opinion of Rav Bruna that chelev niter betaruveis, that animal fat can actually be made usable as long as you mix in some oil. Aval shemen dogim. But the oil of the fish, afilu beinene, you can use actual oil of fish. It needs no engineering. V'chadom or chadsofer, the other one said, dogim ayidei taruvis. Fish oil can be engineered. And that's when it's permissible. Aval chelev, but regular fat, no, klalu klaloi. So this was the dispute. But in the end, we're not sure who said what. We don't know which opinion was the Tanakhama, which was Sumchas. So that's why the Gemara seemed to repeat an opinion that sounds verbatim, but actually isn't. So I think that this Gemara, for as much as it's like an enigma, as I said, wrapped in a mystery, the Gemara actually, it tells us quite a bit. It tells us quite a bit about the oil, about the fuel, about the reasons for proscription or not. Is it about the technicalities of doing something that works for Shabbos? Is it about trying to recreate the biblical image, at least remotely, by saying it has to be oil that comes from a fruit? Does it have to be exactly biblical? They're saying that it has to come from the Shemen Zayit? Or is it not about that? It's not about the fuel. It's not about the source of the illumination. The point is, as long as it illuminates in a way which is conducive to Shmirat Shabbat, which means everybody can see what they're doing, and it doesn't invite the violation of Shabbos, that's good enough. So this really gives us a much better appreciation. That's why, you know, when you learn Gemara and you go through what's called the Shakla Vatarya, the give and take, the discussion, and this sometimes a piece of Gemara like this doesn't show up at all in the Shulchan Aruch, or sometimes it shows up in the Code of Jewish Law in half a sentence. But when you learn the Gemara and you appreciate what the Gemara says, then when you look in the Shulchan Aruch and you see a half a sentence, you understand the profundity, the depth, the idea behind it. The mitzvah now all of a sudden takes on life. It's not simply something you do. You understand the legality, the jurisprudence behind it, and what the Shabbat candles are supposed to be telling us, what they're supposed to represent, and so on and so forth. So on that illuminating note, thank you for joining us, and we shall continue.
Is an herb, but the ripe fruit and seed are used as a medicine.